Welcome to the Buddha Sasana Podcast. This talk was given by Bhikkhu Chintita in Austin, Texas.
Today, I'm beginning a long series of talks on the topic of dependent co-arising, paticca samuppada. The human pathology is that we presume a world that is impossible to live in any satisfactory way. A palliative is to presume otherwise or to be selective in our presumptions in order to make that world more habitable. A cure is, radical as it sounds, to stop presuming altogether with the side effect of rendering the world groundless. In dependent co-arising, the Buddha explores our presumptions, how they arise, how they afflict us, and what happens when we let go of them. We discover that our presumptions form a tangled and knotted mass of conditional dependencies, cross dependencies, circular dependencies, in which each knot in the snarl, held in place by the neighboring tangles, is a challenge to unravel. The 12-link chain of dependent co-arising is a single thread discovered by the Buddha that twists through the snarl that, if we follow it, allows us to proceed systematically, unraveling one knot after another until the entire wad becomes disentangled. The teaching of the chain of dependent co-arising is among the deepest teachings spoken in the early Buddhist texts, the EBT, by the Tathagata, in which the conditioned arising of the illusory self caught in samsara plays a starring role. The chain of dependent co-arising is an entrance into an understanding, one, of the nature of the human dilemma, that is, how we have managed to get ourselves so ensnarled in samsaric existence, and at the same time, two, of the resolution of that dilemma, that is, how we can weaken or break the chain and free ourselves from the chain. In brief, the 12-linked chain is short and straight. It looks like this. Ignorance gives rise to formations. Formations gives rise to cognizance. Cognizance gives rise to name and appearance. Name and appearance gives rise to the sixfold sphere. The sixfold sphere gives rise to contact. Contact gives rise to feeling. Feeling gives rise to craving. Craving gives rise to appropriation. Appropriation gives rise to becoming. Becoming gives rise to birth. Birth gives rise to this mass of suffering. Each factor flows into the next, in the sense that one factor is a necessary condition for the arising of the one that follows, and the cessation of one factor entails the cessation of the next. In reference to both its depth and its comprehensiveness, the Buddha once said, "Whoever sees dependent co-arising sees the Dhamma. Whoever sees the Dhamma sees dependent co-arising." Through this linear, step-by-step formulation, the Buddha provided us with a practicable means to approach this profound and difficult teaching. At one point, the Buddha recognized that Venerable Ananda naively failed to appreciate its full depth. It's amazing, Lord. It's astounding how deep this dependent co-arising is and how deep its appearance And yet to me it seems as clear as clear can be. Don't say that, Ananda, don't say that. Deep is this dependent co-arising, and deep its appearance. It's because of not understanding and not penetrating this Dhamma that this generation is like a tangled snarl, a knotted ball of string, like matted rushes and reeds, and does not go beyond transmigration, beyond the plains of deprivation, woe, and bad destinations. Unfortunately, this seems to have become the historical norm among students of the Dhamma, not to recognize the full depth of dependent co-arising, particularly with regard to those links that reveal the groundlessness of the human experience. In fact, this was predicted by the Buddha. When those discourses spoken by the Tathagata that are deep, deep in meaning, supramundane, dealing with emptiness, are being recited, they will not be eager to listen to them, nor lend an ear to them, nor apply their minds to understanding them. And they will not think those teachings should be studied and mastered. In this way, bhikkhus, those discourses spoken by the Tathagata that are deep, deep in meaning, supramundane, dealing with emptiness, will disappear. Therefore, bhikkhus, you should train yourselves thus. When those discourses spoken by the Tathagata that are deep, deep in meaning, supramundane, dealing with emptiness, are being recited, we will be eager to listen to them, will lend ear to them, will apply our minds to understand them, and we will think those teachings should be studied and mastered. Thus should you train yourselves. In his lecture series on dependent co-arising, Venerable Jnanananda, the late Sinhalese scholar monk, whose influences run deep through my own talks and my own work on this subject, spoke of a path of Dhamma overgrown for centuries, and states in rather critical terms with regard to the Buddha's prediction, "This is precisely what came to pass. At present, what is called paticca-samuppada is a formula to be by-hearted and recited up and down. It has no other significance. But it's with this formula that the Buddha solved the entire samsaric puzzle. This confusion is not of recent origin. It has gone on for quite a long time. But what has been happening all this time? A basket was simply handed down without examining what is in it. Our teacher has said this. We must not go beyond it. Our commentators have explained it like this. We must not think beyond their explanations. A vast delusion has gone on for a long, long period, getting hold of the brains, lay and monk alike." Indeed, when we begin to flesh out the chain with additional causally related factors in the snarl and consider the dynamics of these factors in cognitive processing, we begin to appreciate the full complexity of this teaching. The Buddha presented dependent co-arising as a simple linear change for expository purposes. But that chain wends its way through a much larger snarl that is, as a whole, almost impossible to track or comprehend, since each knot in this snarl is typically conditioned by and conditions many other knots. Trying to disentangle it reveals that its dynamics actually involves many branches, loops, overlaps, and cross-entanglements, so that our highlighted chain becomes, in fact, twisted and knotted with many other strings and even with itself along the way. But we are assured this is the Buddha's brilliant insight, that if we proceed along the linear chain that he marked out, teasing it apart, knot by knot, the whole snarl will ultimately unravel. The perspective of the 12 links does not comprehend all of the human mind, but is limited to that which brings about trouble and suffering, to the human pathology, samsara, in search of personal advantage. For instance, although we learn a lot about the arising of greed, aversion, and delusion, we learn nothing about where kindness, compassion, and generosity come from, though these seem naturally to displace the former as our practice begins to tease apart the chain. Also, the pathology it exposes has little to do with the actual content of experience and much to do with its architecture. Craving, for instance, is just craving, regardless of whether it is rooted in childhood deprivation or in unrequited love or in too much exposure to TV advertising. Although each instance of craving has content, the pathology results primarily from the structure of conditionality expressed in the various links. In writing yet another book on dependent co-arising, I hope to meld three perspectives that my particular background brings to the table. The first perspective is that of a cognitive scientist, my former academic profession, before donning the robes of a mendicant. As such, I am intent on revealing a cognitively coherent interpretation of this teaching by the world's first great cognitive scientist. The second perspective is that of many listeners as well, that of a Buddhist practitioner looking for support for spiritual practice that leads towards liberation from samsara. The third perspective I bring is that of a student focused on the EBT, the early Buddhist texts, committed to recovering the Buddha's original intentions and willing to reconsider traditional and time-worn interpretations in those terms. In addition, I hope to provide the modern listener and reader with an accessible and comprehensive discussion of this ancient and profound teaching in a single book or a single series of lectures. In writing about Dhamma, I try to follow the principle: if you cannot describe something in simple terms, it's because you don't understand it yourself, a principle that I find has been a guide for my own learning as much as for my writing. I can report that many times over many years I sat down confidently at the keyboard, intending to shine light on some topic, only to discover, to my surprise, I really do not understand it myself. But in each case, it has drawn me deeper into the topic and encouraged me to try anew. I fully recognize that there are profound disagreements out there in the interpretation of many aspects of dependent co-arising. I imagine myself at this point to have worked most of the kinks out to my own satisfaction, but know that a few vexing issues still resist my efforts, and anticipate that mistakes remain, for which I take full responsibility. Within these talks, I will present each of the 12 links in approximately an equal amount of time, in the book and an equally lengthy chapter. I present the chain in reverse order, starting downstream at this massive suffering and working my way upstream to end at ignorance, the source of it all. I find that the reverse order best reveals the logic of dependent co-arising. And apparently this is the order in which the Buddha resolved the human dilemma in the first place. In the course of these chapters, I have chosen as a matter of focus and coherence to pass by with little or no acknowledgement alternative popular interpretations of various points, both traditional and current. Rather, I've postponed these to an appendix to the book that underlies these talks. With that, I will begin next week, by talking about this mass of suffering, the final link in dependent co-arising.